Okay, thanks, everyone. I guess we're on now. So let's have our call to order and our roll call, please.
Sure. Member Vardis.
Here.
Member Wallace.
Here.
Member Akita.
Here.
Member Molnar.
Here.
Member Lucy.
Here.
And Chair Ray.
Here.
Let the record show we do have a quorum.
Thank you. And let's move on to item number two, then. That's public comment. This is the opportunity for members of the public to address the committee that's on items that are not on the agenda. Would anyone like to step forward and speak on anything that is not on our agenda this evening? Going once? Going twice? Okay, then we'll move on to item number three. This is meeting minutes of September 20th, 2012.
Move to approve.
Second.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second for discussion. I'll just add that I was not there, so I will be abstaining from the vote. Any other discussion? Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. And one abstention. Item four, operations report. We have the water plant operations.
Good evening, everyone. Can you hear me? Okay. I'm Ron Coleman, Lopez Water Treatment Plant. Looks like we have water plant operations first, so we'll start with that. The current plant production is 6.3 MGD, million gallons a day. The current filter end run turbidities are 0.02 or less. Our state water deliveries, currently they're off. They're down for DWO, down for their annual maintenance. And while they're off, we have switched to free chlorine as our disinfectant in the treatment plant and in our distribution system. So the Zone 3 agencies can take advantage of the free chlorine and flush their systems at this time. Also, while the state water's off, we won't be producing chloramine, so we'll be doing some little extra maintenance looking at the chlorine dioxide system and the service in the ammonia system. That's the water treatment plant. As far as the dam storage, current elevation was 508.37, storage 37364 acre feet, capacity of 75.9.
October
isn't there. I didn't get it done in time.
Oh,
sorry.
Good answer. Okay, thank you.
I'm sorry. I'm truthful.
No, don't apologize.
Bad habit I have.
Any other questions? Okay, then seeing no more questions, thank you so much. Then we'll move forward to item five. That's the budget, the quarterly update.
I like this lady.
Okay,
hi, my name is Jenny Brunick, County Public Works. Tonight, we'll be presenting the first quarter budget status report for Flood Control Zone 3. The first graph represents routine operations and maintenance. As of the first quarter, O&M is under budget by 13%, or $106,000. The majority of this savings comes from the professional services section of the water treatment plant. And the second graph represents non-routine O&M, and this is under budget by 15%, or $16,000. And this is due to the Lopez Water Rights HCP expense. And we're looking at those expenditures to be reflected in the next two quarters. The third graph represents capital outlay reserves. Capital outlay is under budget by 67%, or $900,000. This is due to the Rodriguez Bridge waterline crossing. And that, I believe, it's completed or pretty close to being completed. So the majority of the expenditures will be reflected in the second quarter on that. And then the Lopez Water Treatment Plant pH suppression has been canceled. And staff in a separate item will bring it to your committee for a recommendation to have the funds reallocated to the Prop 50 match for the Lopez Turnout SCADA improvements and the Orchid Road drainage diversion. And let's see. So overall, we are under budget by 25% in the first quarter. So I have three items, so we can do it however you want to. I'm going to go through all three of them first and then ask. Or
why don't we see if there's any questions so far?
Okay.
No.
Okay. Do we have an idea of the Rodriguez? Is that going to come within budget, or what's the status?
Yes, that is pretty close to, I believe, being under budget. It's pretty
about 75,000 under budget.
Yeah. Okay, so how much would it reduce this 900,000 by? Do you have an idea?
You know, I don't have that board item in front of me. I don't know. Do you have it by chance? The board item or the capital?
There's a later agenda item that's proposing to take that funds and use it as matching for a Prop 50 grant.
Okay,
so that wasn't my question. My question was about Rodriguez. How much is that going to cost us totally?
Oh, I'm sorry. That's total? Okay.
Yes. Okay, well,
you know, I don't have that number in front of me. I'm sorry.
We're going to talk about this later, aren't we? An update on it?
Yeah, I don't have that exact number, but I believe if there's an exhibit in another staff report that I can walk you through, and we'll just subtract 75,000 from that figure.
All right, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Okay, if not, I can email you the copy of the board letter when it's done.
All right, thank you. Okay. Uh-huh. Any other questions so far? All right.
Okay. The second item is good news. There's a credit due to the agencies for $478,532 from 11-12, which the invoices that are due January 1st, the credits went out yesterday along with the billing. So, and I have those numbers if any of you are interested in what your refund was.
What was Oceana's refund, please?
Might as well tell us all.
Okay. City of Arroyo Grande, the refund due was $234,410.64. And then the City of Grover Beach, $74,046.08. City of Pismo Beach, $78,555.61. And then CSA 12 was $55,996.29. And then Oceano was $24,572.17. And then there's some smaller ones for Avila Valley Mutual Water, that was 780. San Miguelito was 9,888. And the San Luis Coastal School was $231. And the Avila Beach Community Services District was $49. So that totals the 450, whatever it is, 478.
Okay. So just from my understanding, so what happens with these credits?
We issue them back. We send with the January statement, you'll get an invoice for what's due January 1st for fiscal year 12-13, and then the credit will reduce it by, in your case, $74,000. So you'll pay $74,000 less on January 13th.
Thank you very much.
So that's good news.
Yes, it is.
I hope you follow that up with even better news. What was the third thing?
Well, the third thing was just...
Chair, if I might. Jenny, it might not be a bad idea if you could run a sample calc for us on how that derives from the auditor's office through Public Works and gets reallocated through Zone 3 to the various agencies.
Okay, sure.
So we can explain to our boards and council as mm-hmm. to how the county overhead works.
Sure.
Beneficial.
Okay, and I can send that Monday. I'll send it to an email on Monday because I have to get with... someone in John's staff to calculate.
It's not a priority item, but it'd be nice to have because during budget season, we always get those kinds of questions.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. No problem. Mm-hmm. And any other questions?
Thank you so much.
Thank
that
you.
Was good news.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah. All right. That moves us on to item six, information items. So we'll start with the HCP status report.
Good evening, Chairman Ray, members of the committee. I'm Mark Hutchinson. I'm the Environmental Division Manager for the Department of Public Works. I have a brief PowerPoint in our series of informational presentations on the Habitat Conservation Plan and all the elements related to it. We can see that the schedule that we laid out last year has us today talking about the Resource Agency post-submittal process, which is a subset of our July 19th presentation that we actually gave on September 20th. Where we look briefly at the Endangered Species Act and some of the other laws and regulations that apply. The five key statutes that we reviewed were these on the board. Today, again, we'll be delving into one process related to the Endangered Species Act. As a reminder, we can see here where we are in our process. Up there in the upper left, the pre-submittal process is developing the HCP and working through the downstream release program and other issues with the agencies. What we're looking at tonight is the post-submittal process. What happens after we get general agreement from the agency staff and actually submit the document and other elements of the package to them? What do they do with it? One of the things that they're going to do is produce a NEPA document, National Environmental Policy Act. The district will produce the CEQA document as the state lead agency. The federal government will be doing the NEPA process. We'll see in the flowcharts that I have from their information that they've changed things up just a little bit, and we'll look at the details. I put this up for illustrative purposes in that when we get to the big overall flowchart, which there's a full-size copy in your staff report, we need to be reminded that each of the boxes we see in the flowchart in and of itself creates its own flowchart that looks like that if we were to delve into it. And certainly for the folks listening or watching at home, we're dealing with three federally listed species that we're all familiar with now, the steelhead trout, listed back in 97, red-legged frog, which is also in the creek, listed in 1996. And then as we work through the HCP, one of the decision points that we're coming to and that we'll work through with the Technical Advisory Committee and then bring to your committee is whether or not the lower downstream boundary of the HCP should be extended from its current limit at the upper end of the flood control channel all the way to the ocean. What are the pros and cons of that? And if we extend it, will we also include tidewater goby as a covered species in our proposal? A brief review of the Endangered Species Act, again enacted in 1973. If you look at that date, 73, people remind me that the dam was built in 1969, so aren't we grandfathered in? And unlike many environmental laws, state and federal, we need to be reminded that the Endangered Species Act has absolutely no provision for grandfathering any project or process. The theory is there is that the things that we were doing prior to 1973 is what caused the species to become threatened or endangered in the first place, so we're not allowed to keep doing whatever the problem was that we did. There's a very long list of things that the Endangered Species Act prohibits under the general term of take, and this is one of those. Buried deep in the Federal Register, it says that removing water or altering stream flow when it impairs spawning migration, feeding or other essential behavior patterns, and that's the one that sweeps up our project, because essentially what we're talking about as a project is the operation of the Lopez Dam as far as downstream releases go, turning the valve on and turning it off, how much and when. We know that, of course, we can be allowed take. There are exceptions, and one of those is an incidental take permit that requires something called a habitat conservation plan, which essentially is just a very large and complex mitigation plan. We're looking at a 20-year permit, so as you can imagine, the agencies are expecting quite a bit of detail in this. And the agencies in 1996, it's available online with a little bit of searching. There are a couple of updates, but not many. Two interesting things. It was actually produced for internal agency use, and then they released it to the public. It has a disclaimer in the front that the average person should not attempt to use this handbook, that but especially talented consultants may find it useful. The interesting thing about it is it says handbook on the front, and the document is an inch thick and 300 pages long. They didn't appreciate my comment on that, that perhaps manual or encyclopedia would have been a better title. So I'm going to be presenting the information basically from the handbook. Now, what's interesting, I do have to do a disclaimer at this point. When we set out the list of topics that we wanted to cover with your committee, I made the assumption that the post-submittal process is a topic that many agencies have been interested in over the years, and that all I would need to do is get on the Internet, Fish and Wildlife site, find their presentation, spiff it up, make a little more sense out of it, and present it to you. If you were today go on to Google and type ESA or post-submittal process for the Endangered Species Act, I think the first five hits are the previous staff reports that I've written to you saying that we're going to talk about this. So apparently,
groundbreaking.
We're breaking some sort of ground, I think. Sure. Here's our familiar flow chart, and you do have a full-size one in your staff report, because in the handouts there's just little bitty ones that are not very useful. Now let's see what we can do with this. You'll see at the right, application accepted as complete. That's one small box on the flow chart. And it turns out in this entire process, once we have our HCP done and submitted, that is the piece that takes the longest. We'll be in regular contact with the two agencies as we bring the HCP together. They'll know at their first, they call it field office level, exactly what's in the document. We'll turn it into them, and then they will do a line-by-line review and produce their formal comment letter on the document. Supposed to take 6 to 9 months for them to go through it. No estimate on how long it takes us to digest what they've returned back to us. And, of course, the goal of our team is to shorten that process as much as possible and get a letter that is short as possible so that we don't have wholesale changes to make in the document.
So where are we in the application?
We are in the upper left box. We've had our initial consultation, and we are developing our HCP. Later on, I'll show you the schedule. Let me see if this has – it does. We're in this box, and unfortunately, we've been there since about 2001.
Exactly.
We did progress to this point and then bounce back to that point in 2005.
So how much longer till we get over to the next box?
I have a schedule for that. I'll show you how much longer.
Okay.
Well, I'll show you exactly where we are and what our schedule is. Once it gets into the agency, I should point out, they have the field office column on the left and the regional office on the right. This is from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. National Marine Fisheries Service has changed it up just a little bit. But you see that in our case for Fish and Wildlife, Ventura office will be over here, and on the right is Sacramento. You see things in there that once they've agreed that the application is complete, they like the HCP, there's a tremendous amount of internal process they do that involves legal reviews, reviews that go to Washington, D.C. and back, quite a bit of stuff that we don't see. Their handbook, if you look in there, is focused on making those things more efficient and also identifies all the steps within the agencies that are done concurrently rather than in a linear fashion. So a lot of things go on that are concurrent. They produce notices and draft findings here. In this box, you see something called the Finding of No Significant Impact. That's the NEPA document. I need to stop at that point. Through their flow charts that they've been publishing, it says that the applicant, us, produces a draft NEPA document, submits it with the package. And then they would review the document, make whatever changes they view as appropriate. National Marine Fisheries Service has changed that up. Now they want a consultant under their control to write the NEPA document. So as soon as we get the HCP up and running, and have an identified submittal date, we'll be negotiating with them on the cost and scope for a separate consultant. It can't be the same consultant that we've hired on the HCP, and although we have to pay for it, they will direct that consultant's work. So there'll be some negotiation going on with National Marine Fisheries Service Long Beach. They're going to take the lead on NEPA, and Fish and Wildlife will use their document. So that's something that's changed over the last 5 or 10 years. Mostly due to litigation, I believe, at the federal level. Moving on. Again, though, the HCP is an all-encompassing document, so if it's properly written, it shouldn't force consultants to spend a lot of research time in trying to find out the whys and the hows and the what-ifs. Because remember, we're negotiating with on a near-monthly basis with regional offices, or field offices, excuse me, and producing a document that they're very comfortable with, but then it goes up to another level of review for people who, without a map, don't know where Arroyo Grande Creek is. So we have to write the document so that there's no question about background and the whys and the wherefores in it. That also helps when a NEPA consultant comes in and picks up the document and has to decide what the environmental impacts resulting from it are.
Okay.
You see here on the chart there's a 30-day comment period, so they will release the HCP, their proposed implementation agreement, that's a legal agreement that we'll have to sign, and the NEPA document for public review. We'll be working with them to try to coordinate the CEQA review along with that. One of the challenges is we don't want to overwhelm everyone and say you have 30 days to read three huge, thick documents. So we may attempt to lead with the CEQA document a little bit because we're all familiar with that. And then we'll be able to point out what's different about the other two documents when the federal agencies come out with those. Although the HCP, once it's submitted to the agencies, will be available throughout the process to the public, generally posted on their website. And, of course, we'll post it on ours. I wanted to jump over here. You see these boxes? It says draft or final biological opinion, and over here, Section 7 consultation. And John's laughing over there. We said we're in the Section 10 processes, which were projects that have no federal nexus. Section 7, when we have a federal nexus, is a much easier process to go through, and the question's been asked multiple times at the TAC level, why aren't we Section 7? And we've had those discussions, and then here we are right in the middle of the Section 7 or Section 10 process. We have a process that's reserved exclusively for federal agencies. And to put it short, the agency is legally required to consult under Section 7. Every federal agency has to consult with the resource agency when they take any action that might harm an endangered species. In this case, the action is approving a Section 10 permit. So each agency, U.S. Fish and Wildlife on one hand and National Marine Fisheries on the other, will consult with themselves in a formal Section 7 process. They call it consulting internally. Our National Marine Fisheries rep says he's used to talking to himself anyway, so it's not a problem. But they have to produce documents, a biological assessment, from a slightly different perspective than Section 10, and then an opinion, which is a response to the document that they wrote, and then write findings, publish it in the Federal Register, and put it out there for review for the public and other federal agencies. That, again, is an internal process, and it goes along concurrently with the NEPA reviews and other things. But it's interesting that it does take up quite a bit of space and time in the agency's process to do that. Then we get to the good part. They'll produce a permit, a set of findings, what's called a signature package. That's the biological opinion from Section 7, something called a statement of findings, which relates to Section 10, and then an implementing agreement. That is the agreement, after we've done the HCP and everything else, the thing that actually describes exactly what we have to do and what we can't do and whys and the wherefores is in the implementing agreement. So it's a separate document from the HCP, but it's the one that is a legally enforceable federal document. And of course, that'll come forward for review and signature ultimately at the Board of Supervisors. One thing that we need to avoid is this process on the right called Jeopardy, which is not the game show. If in the Section 7 process the agency makes a Jeopardy finding, which is a statement that whatever it is we're doing is likely to jeopardize the continued existence of steelhead or red-legged frog or maybe goby in Arroyo Grande Creek, then we're at a dead end and we back up. So obviously, as we prepare the HCP and work with the agency staff, we want to make sure that we're very solid and that they're not going to, after an 18-month review process, come up with a Jeopardy finding. Here we are with the schedule. This is the one that we've been working with. It was given to us by the agencies.
2007.
Way back when. And you'll remember, those of you who saw it the first time, the thing that's interesting is across the top it says months, but there's no dates. And we try to get the Fish and Wildlife Service to put dates on it, but they don't do that. See this line up here, draft HCP. That is, they're reviewing the draft HCP for completeness. The anticipation is that we will have worked with the field office to process. The agencies tell us, again, 18 months. So how do we get to month one? Where are we?
Exactly. That was going to be my question.
I anticipated that. So back to this. Month one is right there in the middle of HCP, right through the C. Here's our work status update, and I have a schedule that goes along with this. As you'll recall, we are waiting for the water availability analysis to be completed by Stetson Engineers. They did give us an administrative draft document. It's been reviewed by my team, and now Dean Benedict's team in Utilities is reviewing my comments and also the document to prepare comments back to the consultant. We did meet as a team and talk with Stetson in a conference call and expressed some serious concerns. I can just give you the highlights. We're concerned about assumptions they made going into the document, where they got agricultural irrigation rates, how they calculated the extent of irrigated agriculture, how they didn't account for seasonal variations in agricultural irrigation rates. And then this one here is our concern that the numbers in the documents are the center of range, with no discussion about the probability that it might be higher or lower than the numbers that they chose, which again are based on assumptions which we don't feel are necessarily well supported at all. And then the big one, the information in the water availability analysis is compared to existing practices of the district, the release rates that we've been using over the past 7 to 8 years, and has not been related to what's proposed to be changed in the downstream release program in the HCP, which the same consultant prepared. We had about 4 more pages of comments, how should I say, which are mostly not complimentary. And I'm looking forward to working with them on getting this thing straightened out and up to a much better level so that we can then circulate it through the TAC and the agencies for more detailed review.
Go back, please. I'm kind of curious. What do irrigation rates and seasonal variations in irrigation rates have to do with our HCP? All of this analysis, all of these items here are taking a long time and are actually slowing down, in my opinion, the HCP process. So explain to me why we're having to deal with irrigation rates and all of these questions.
Well, there's 2 basic trains of thought. One of them is the water availability analysis is a component of the water rights application, which is parallel to the HCP.
Is that required for the HCP?
Taking the next step, what is required for the HCP is an analysis of the impacts of implementing a different downstream release program.
Okay.
And the water availability analysis is important because it identifies not only what the downstream water rights are, so who has rights to the water downstream, and how do you impact their legal rights when you change the downstream release program, but also going beyond that, which has been a subject for discussion at the TAC, what is the impact of the HCP on agriculture, which is currently going on down below the dam? That's not only a NEPA and CEQA issue, but that's a community issue. Agricultural is important to the agricultural, to Rio Grande Valley and the county as a whole. So our goal is to produce an HCP downstream release program that does not have unnecessary significant impacts on agriculture.
I don't question that at all. I'm questioning why we're going into irrigation rates, because that has nothing to do with needs or use. That is, my question is, this analysis maybe needs to be in 2 parts. The part that is important for the HCP, and then a part that's for this other program
that you're taking care of.
And so, okay, this moment. So I just want to make sure that all of this is not slowing down our HCP. That is my concern. And we're taking care of something else that has to do with the county that doesn't have to do with Zone 3.
Well, if we look at the graph, and this really tells the story, what we have from the consultant right now is an HCP proposal that says in wet years our annual releases are going to follow the yellow line. We'll mimic wintertime flows with these releases that follow storms, and in the summer we're going to release 3 cubic feet per second downstream. In drier years, we'll reduce our wintertime flows and release 3 cubic feet per second downstream. The green line is what we release today in order to satisfy the existing modifying the natural stream flow. Okay. It turns out that while discussing stream flow needs, there we were notified by the state that the old water rights permit didn't quite match the way the dam's been operated. And at that point, the state board said, put the water rights on hold, do the HCP, because you're going to need that before we can approve a new water rights. They're going to have to come together.
And the WAA is required as part of the water rights.
It's required as part of the water rights.
In order to figure that out, you need the WAA to perfect your project description for the HCP and the release schedule.
Exactly. They need to match.
Does that help, Phyllis?
A little, thank you.
Okay, thanks. Why don't we go on?
Okay, so this graph, this is one that I showed the TAC, and to their credit, they predicted this graph before I got to it. But that's really the crux of what we're trying to work with the consultant is we need a water availability analysis that describes how the downstream water rights are going to work with the HCP proposals so that there's a single downstream release program that satisfies all the need. We can't go forward with a water rights application that says there's this much water available in HCP that proposes reducing the flows by over half and then get to a point in the process where we have a water rights permit and an incidental take permit that both can't be satisfied because they have different flow rates in them. That has to be the same. Here's our pre-submittal schedule. This is where we are now. Right here's the water availability analysis, and right below it is the downstream release program revisions to accommodate both the downstream water rights and, in a very closely related process, the downstream water needs. And then these steps, agency briefing done, final work scope for the consultant done, H.D. Harvey's been hired. They've taken this line as far as they can go. Now they need downstream release program, and to get that, we need the water availability analysis.
Which is behind schedule, right?
Very much so. It's supposed to be done last month.
Okay, so what's holding it up?
Consultant timing. So we'll get our comments back to them, and then one of the key questions for the consultant is, when are we going to have this done? Because the turnaround times to date have not met the predicted contract requirements.
So does the consultant give us a reason why they're behind?
Workload is all we get. I should say that across the board in this economy, all of the consultants that I work with are having a bit of difficulty meeting short time frames because nobody out there has the depth of staff that they had 5 or 6 years ago, and without guaranteed work in the future, they're unable to bring on extra people. So it's an across-the-board problem. I think, though, this consultant's been on board for several years, to my understanding, on the project, and I think if we can sit down with them, show them the schedules, explain to them where we are, and then find out, are you able to operate at a faster pace or not? I think if we're able to show them the pace that we're asking at and they need to bring on staff to do that, it's a big enough project that they could, but that's a conversation that's, yet to be had.
Can you communicate it to the staff person, I mean to the consultant that we're paying for, that this board or several people on this board, we want a schedule?
Oh, you know, definitely.
If we're going to be paying for it, we want a schedule. We want a condition that the schedule will be met. I don't care how busy he is, you know, and I'm fronting the bill, you know.
Oh, yes.
Gotta stick to the time schedule and the
I'm on board with that.
So if you could just put that in very strong language, and I can help you with the language.
So can I.
We could
You could reiterate that importance that we're losing patience.
Just want to add, I mean, for what it's worth, involved in water right applications and HCPs for dating back till 1993, 94, and all water right applications take a long time.
working with the State Water Resources Control Board takes a long time.
Yes.
And HCPs never go smoothly, and they always take much longer than you think. So I think it's important that we keep track of this and we drive it as best as we can. But at the same time, I think we need to temper our expectations with what's realistic and the agencies that we're dealing with and what we're trying to do.
Well, that's one of the challenges for an HCP, because we're all used to, we're used to EIRs and general plan updates in our boards and commissions. And we know what a long time is, and it's very difficult to wrap your head around the HCP process and the number of years that things take. I think all of us want to move this thing forward. The alligator shows up in the creek, and the alligator's in the details.
Well, there is.
We've run across a few already.
Thank you for that.
I'll put on the overhead for folks who may be watching this on TV or the Internet later on. My contact information is there if anybody has questions or suggestions for habitat conservation plans. And with that, I'm available for any questions your committee may have.
Mr. Wallace.
Mark, just the same old question. How many HCPs have been approved in the state of California?
Ooh, in the state, I'm not sure. I know nationwide the number is approaching 300. I just happened to run across that on a website.
I think a couple of years ago you were remarking that there were only one or two that had been approved in the state of California.
Well, for steelhead, one.
One.
Who is that?
Humboldt Bay Mutual Water Company. I'm not sure mutual. Humboldt Bay Water Company in Arcata, north of Eureka.
So it has the same species of concern that we do, and only one's been approved in the state.
One. And as you can imagine, I've looked very closely at the details of that particular HCP. And to give you an illustration of what we're dealing with, they have a dam at the headwaters of the Mad River. The dam is located above natural barriers, so it in and of itself is not an impediment to steelhead. They have an intake facility just above Blue Lake, so just a little bit in from the coast, 7 or 8 miles. So they release, they save excess winter flows, release it in the summer, and then collect about half of it at their intake facilities and deliver it to their customers. It turned out that the operational mode they'd been following for some 25 years had actually increased the steelhead and salmon population in the stream because it exactly mimicked pre-development flows and pre-logging flows. The number that jumps out is that they consider low flow in their river to be anything below 6,000 cubic feet per second.
We'll take it.
And so I thought, we will be the first HCP for fish that is accomplished with essentially no water compared to those kind of numbers.
Thank you for that. Any other questions?
Back to the water availability analysis. So sorry. I might have to word this correctly. Is this being done just for Zone 3, or is this being, this, to clarify, is also being done for county purposes?
This is Zone 3 only, the Lopez project.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Then that moves us on to 6B, which is change in Arroyo Grande representation.
Which already happened, I guess.
Thank you. The Department of Public Works received a letter from the City of Arroyo Grande requesting that the current member, Joe Costello, and the alternate member, Karen Ray, swap positions and Ms. Ray become the permanent member. And so this is an informational item, and wanted to let your advisory committee know that we will be taking that item to the board this next Tuesday for confirmation. And Ms. Ray should become the permanent member and Mr. Costello the alternate moving forward for the remainder of until Arroyo Grande sends us another letter, I suppose. So that's it. Any questions?
Nope. Thank you. Then item 6C, Oceano Point of Delivery of Water.
Thank you. This is also another informational item.
Is it an action item? Do I need to recuse myself?
It's informational only. So no, you do not. We've received a request from the Oceano Community Services District to change their point of delivery from its current location to about 3/4 of a mile down the road to their water yard, which is on 20th Street. And the primary driver for this is to eliminate flow restrictions that are at the Briscoe turnout. Their water contract allows for change of in appointed delivery, but it's subject to some certain conditions. One, if OCSD is going to have the district do the work, then they'll supply the funds necessary to do the work. If they wish to do the work and incur the expenses, then they need to obtain district approval on the plans and specs. So we're currently working with the CSD on these contract conditions, and it was brought to the TAC on November 1st. The TAC discussed some items that they wanted to make sure were fully vetted, that being obviously the modifications that were going to take place, security considerations of the line and the new meter and the point of delivery, right-of-way considerations, who's going to own the line, and is it a CSD pipe in a county road, or is it a county pipe in a county road still? There's three. The first is Rodriguez Bridge, and construction is complete. We got it done before the rainy season and before we were booted out of the creek for construction, so that's very good news. We do have some mitigation to finish up, planting some trees and doing some monitoring, some long-term monitoring of the habitat in the vicinity of the creek. And it also, we're still in a good bidding environment, and it came in about $75,000 under total project budget. So I don't know the $850,000. Okay, well, we'll have Jenny Brennick come up and explain your previous question. Member Molnar.
I did have a number I received from Tom Trott. The estimated expenditures are $498,000. The budget as of 12/13 was $572,744. So $498,000 is estimated, so leaving it a $74,744 under.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay. And here you have this is a picture of the finished creek channel. Last meeting I showed you some photos when they actually got started with the first day of work, and quite a different scene now that work is done. And in your packets you guys had a bunch of other photos that showed the work up and down the channel. So happy to have that done before the rainy season. Another project is the terminal reservoir inlet valve control. This project's currently underway, hoping to be done spring of 2013. And it looks like with the bids that came in, it's also going to be in under about $20,000 under budget. And these are some photos from your... let me open that. From your packet as well, the old valve, which was below ground, the new above-ground valve, and then the photos here on the right show where the old pit was, and then the new above-ground storage unit that houses the valve. And then another project was the access road. This was done in-house with our staff. It's also complete, saved about $15,000, and made a quite a big difference. You can see it was basically a foot trail up to the water tank, and now we have a all-weather access road to get up there.
Does the dog come with the property?
Yeah, I don't know whose dog that is. Ron's not here to tell us, but it's somebody's. And then a project that's currently underway and we've discussed before is the chemical containment, and we're anticipating that that will be within budget as well. So those are the capital project updates, and entertain any questions if anyone has any.
I just had a question, John, on the on when you talk about the budget, are you talking about the overall total costs, including multiple fiscal years, or are you talking about the budget for the current fiscal year?
Yeah. Jenny, is it for this current fiscal year? It's for this current fiscal year.
I'm sorry?
Oh, multiple, excuse me.
Multiple. Okay, because that was a question that we had for Tom, I think, at the TAC meeting. When we looked at the figures, it was really representing only the current budget, and you really couldn't tell what the total cost of the project was without bringing forward all the previous fiscal year's expenditures and planning and design and so forth. So I just want to make sure that when we're talking about, maybe in the next item, when we're talking about savings on projects, that it's really a savings over the total project budget, not just the fiscal year.
No, it's a total project.
Okay.
Because we roll those numbers over into the final budget, so it's the total.
Very good. Thank you.
Then I have a question. So we're at, I added these three up, so we're at $110,000, you know, under budget on these items.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we do with this 110? Does that...
That'll come up next,
that's the next
right?
item.
That's the next item.
Okay, I'm ahead. Right, thank you.
Shall I proceed?
Please.
Okay. Item 8A is our budget projections and the Prop 50 project advancement. So the savings that we have anticipated for FY12-13 is about $274,000. And you can see here it's because of budget savings that we discussed, and then also projects like the pH suppression system weren't undertaken. So that leaves us with this bottom line here of $274,000 in budget savings. And simultaneously, we were approached by DWR for another round of Prop 50 funds, grant funds. And we had applied a long time ago but never heard from them, and they brought forward the projects that we had applied.
Or commented. My only comment is, why not? Because you're getting double your money. So that makes that savings get really leveraged. So I'm all for it.
So what's the time frame on this then? How soon do we hear about whether or not we are going to receive this grant?
Fairly soon. And let me get that information.
And can they approve all three, or they could approve just one?
They could probably approve just one, but it sounds like they're going to approve all three. And we applied August 31st, and I believe we're going to hear from them fairly soon because they're going to want us to start construction in FY 2013-14. And so I don't know an exact date. I can report back to you at the next meeting, but we might know by then as well.
Oh, we might. Okay,
yeah.
Perfect.
But I'll shoot out an email. I'll talk to Tom about when he expects to hear from them and let you know via email.
And then we'll be provided with the schedule of when each of these just different projects will be starting, or hope to start.
Yeah, that'll be part of our capital project updates, is the current schedule of the new projects.
All right, thank you. Mm-hmm. Any other questions or comments? Then you need a motion on this, don't you?
Yes.
I'd so move that we support the use of the savings for the match with the Prop 50 grant money.
Second the motion.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Okay, can we get roll call? Or do you need roll call or voice vote?
Either.
Okay, might as well do a voice vote. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion carries. That takes us forward to 8B, which is the approval of the 2013 calendar. Sir?
Okay. This is our last meeting for the calendar year, so we've compiled the meeting dates for 2013, and Public Works staff talked to all the various agencies and made sure the rooms were available, and that's the calendar that is before you for approval.
I move to approve the schedule.
I'll second. Discussion, ladies?
Yeah. Were we going to integrate Oceano, having the meetings in Oceano, into that? When we did the bylaws change, we talked about rotation, and I see that Oceano's there once.
The rotation was for chair and vice chair, wasn't for meetings. The meetings maintained as just being set by your advisory group. There was no rotation of meetings in the bylaws.
Yeah, there was a rotation of where the meetings were to be held, and in fact that we had the one meeting that was canceled was to be held at the district, so we were going to rotate not only position of chair, but position of location on where the meeting was going to be. And if it got lost in the bylaws change, I apologize, but you know, I repeatedly brought it up that Zone 3 needed to meet in Oceano because we are one of the stakeholders, and it was, you know, odd that the meetings were never held in Oceano, and Oceano has never been chair of this body as well.
Mr. Wallace?
Just a comment, Member Lucy. I think Oceano is shown there in rotation. Are you suggesting maybe that we move Oceano up to a earlier meeting?
No. And then maybe I'm looking at the wrong calendar or whatever, but no, I'm just asking that we meet at Grover Beach, we meet at AG, and we meet in Oceano. And we just keep, you know, and even Pismo we meet in.
Yeah, Oceano's shown on
So Oceano's there
July
for
18th.
July.
Right.
Correct. The bylaws state that just the meetings are held every other month and every third Thursday of that month. It doesn't state where they're held.
John, can I ask a clarifying question real quick here? If I look at the rotation here, we've got Grover Beach, just for advisory committee, not TAC. We've
right.
got Grover Beach, Arroyo Grande, Pismo, Oceano. Grover Beach, Arroyo Grande, then presumably going into 2014, it would
right.
be Pismo Beach, Oceano. You're going in a complete rotation there. It just happens to be that in this calendar year, it's an Oceano one time. Is that correct? Am I reading that correct?
I can't say definitively that's correct. I'm new to being the secretary of the Zone 3, but that would make sense, and we could follow that logic. And
well, I think what the problem is here, we're meeting in Arroyo Grande today, then it would follow that you would meet in Grover, and after that, then you would meet in Pismo, then you would meet in Oceano. It seems that that's, I think, why it doesn't flow properly. Do you see what I'm saying? Okay. So actually, technically, after Grover Beach, it should not be Arroyo Grande, it should be Pismo. And then after Pismo, it should be Ocean.
Tonight, anyway.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Okay, I'm going to guess that we should probably do a roll call here then.
Sure. Member Ikeda.
He said yes.
Oh, did you? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
It sounded like you were going to say something, so
yeah.
We're all...
I didn't push the button.
Pregnant pause.
Member Wallace.
Yes. Yes.
Member Vardis.
Yes.
Member Lucy.
No.
Member Molnar.
No.
Member Ray.
Yes. All right, that takes us to future agenda items. Item 9, which we have none for action items for Board of Supervisor action. So that takes us to item 10, future agenda items. Anything to discuss there?
No, I don't have any. If you have anything you'd like to see brought forward.
Well, maybe we need to bring forward what we were just discussing sometime and get that agendized.
I'll look into the past calendars and bring something back next meeting for discussion.
Thank you. Then that brings us to item 11, committee member comments.
Now, there's just one thing I would like to have added, is the Zone 1-1A, is there a possibility we can get a report since it is one of the, you know, waterways for Lopez? And just an update, because I do think there's some good work being done in that area. Finally, there's some movement, and we all have a vested interest in the zones.
An update on public works activities in 1-1A?
Public works
1-1A
activities,
or?
Is the creek flowing? Are we going to have problems? Is it clean?
What I did last winter was provide precipitation probability rates, and we had some discussion on the channel and flooding.
Right. Okay.
Would that be desirable?
Yeah, that'd be fine. Okay. And I know the Board of Supes got an update Tuesday, which was a great update. So I was just hoping we could get something like that as well.
Okay.
Because it's true, the Zone 3 just doesn't stop right there at the end of the world, you know. It does continue on.
Stops at the 22nd Street Bridge.
All right, Mr. Wallace?
Just to comment on the meeting agenda, just to go ahead with, as Mr. Diodati was talking about. He's made the arrangements now, but I would agree that, John, you maybe could bring this back at another meeting if you had checked the availability of the rooms, and if it's contingent with those agencies, to perhaps move Oceano up into an earlier slot. That would be helpful. Commenting on Zone 11A, the next meeting is Tuesday afternoon at, I believe, 2 o'clock at Oceano.
Right.
And if people want to go to that meeting, that's an open meeting. And thinking about bringing back some of the results of those meetings to this committee, it would be beneficial, I think, to have some updates from time to time on the protective measures that the Public Works Department is doing for the lagoon, which, of course, is tributary to the Roy Granny Creek, along with the sandbar management and those kinds of things, which do affect the operation of the creek. So that would be helpful as a maybe an information item from time to time to see where we are and the flooding issues there.
All right, did you get that? Mm-hmm. All right, thank you, sir. Any other committee member comments?
Just when we're on the creek, the sandbar did breach this weekend.
Good.
So good. Breached in a totally different place, but it breached.
If I could ask a clarifying question, Member Wallace, and move not just move Oceano up, but move them into a position where they have two meetings next in 2013?
No, I think I'd leave that up to your scheduling skills, but from what I heard from the intent of Member Lucy would be maybe to move Oceano in particular up higher in this year's agenda, in this year's schedule. I don't mean to speak for you, Mary, but...
No, you're doing great.
It seems that Arroyo Grande is on here three times. We could substitute out March 21st, and that would take us to all three real quick, so that might be an easy date to target, and then keep the rest of them the same, and that would give them two for this calendar year. So perhaps that could work. Who knows?
Great.
And then just don't mess with the rest of the dates, so that way you don't have to create a huge...
The 21st.
Okay. All right. That takes us to the announcement of the next regular meeting, which is tentatively, well, not tentatively anymore, is now officially scheduled for Thursday, January 17th, 2013, at the Grover Beach City Hall Chambers. Thank you very much, everyone. We're adjourned.